Meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to CCWG Accountability Workstream 2 Jurisdiction Subgroup Meeting Number 25 at 0500 UTC on April 4th. The agenda is in front of you in the Adobe Connect room. Let's briefly review it. After the review of the agenda, go through some of the usual brief administrative moments, and then move on to a brief discussion of the status of the questions to ICANN Legal, followed by a review of any decisions and action items that took place on the last call. And then we'll move on to an update on the questionnaire, which is still open till April 17th. And then from there, move on to a review of the ICANN's past and current litigation. And Matthew Vile, as a workhorse of this subgroup, has provided yet another case that he has summarized, the pool.com case, and we'll be discussing that. There's also updated some reviews. We may discuss those, but at least wanted to make sure everyone was aware that these were updated. And then last but certainly not least, based on discussions on the list and in the most recent plenary, review of our working method. So that is the agenda. Want to see if there are any objections, any improvements, anything should note now that we go in AOB. Seeing none, we'll consider this agenda acceptable. Move on to administration. First, I'd like to see if there is anybody who has a change to a statement of interest since our last meeting. Not seeing anybody coming forward on that. Do we have anybody who is on audio only? We don't seem to have anybody on audio only.
Greg?
Yes.
Good morning or good evening. I will be on audio the last 10 minutes because I have to leave the place and connect it to the internet. Last 10 minutes, I will be on audio. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for letting us know that. You're out of the AC room for the last 10 minutes. That was Caboose. David McCauley has a hand up.
Greg, hi. It's David McCauley. I just wanted to mention that I've started work on the namespace case. I haven't filed it in the documents yet, but if we have time and we want to cover another case, I could begin to talk about namespace versus ICANN. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Much appreciated. Since nobody's had a chance to look at your summary yet, probably won't do that, but let's see if there's any reason we might change our mind about that, but I appreciate the offer. In any case, I'm glad to know that that case is very close to being done, if it's not, in essence, already done by you. Hopefully, I'll be able to say the same, too, about the cases I volunteered for, and we still need more people volunteer. Let's get out of administration. It doesn't look like we have any mystery phone numbers in the participants, so that is good. And we can move on to the review of the status of questions to ICANN Legal. I don't know if staff or Mathieu have any better idea than I do. I have sent off a couple of emails to Sam Eisner asking for an ETA, an estimated time by which they would return the questions to us, or at the very least for an ETA for that estimated time, so we would at least have our expectations managed, so to speak. So far, I have not heard that. So at this point, we are still waiting to hear when we will hear. Yes?
This is Bernie. I was actually on a call with Sam in the middle of the week last week, and she was keenly aware of our request and was aiming to have it completed, if not at the end of last week, by the end of this week. So she is, as usual, quite busy. And I will try as staff to follow up with her again on that to see if that's still on the rails. And that's it for that one. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. I'm glad you had that knowledge. As long as we know approximately when it will come, we at least know, you know, it makes the waiting a little bit easier. Waiting for a time is harder, of course. So now we have that information that covers that status item. We can move on to the review of decisions and action items from the last call. There were no decisions taken on the last call, so that covers A, nor were there any first readings of decisions that would then be made on this call, since we don't decide anything on one call anyway. So we're not halfway through a decision, nor were any completed on the last call. Then that brings us to B, action items. Christopher Wilkinson asked to be added to the QRET. That has been done. And we have created an email list and an email address for the QRET. I have not yet seen that list, but we should get it up and running, perhaps with a test message to the recipients. And as soon as we have that test message out, then we can send a doodle poll on that same list to arrange for a meeting of the QRET, and we can use that list to work on the method of review and reporting of the questionnaire responses. So, which brings us in a nice segue to item six, an update on the questionnaire itself. Are there any questions, though, first on item five or four, for that matter, before I move to item six? I see none, so I'll move on to item six. Update on the questionnaire. There have been no new responses received on the questionnaire since last week. We are kind of in a fallow period as we wait for the anticipated rush of answers between now and April 17th when the questionnaire response period closes. It's about 2 weeks, a little under 2 weeks from now, so it's still not too late for you all to, A, respond if you have anything to respond to any of the questions. We hope that some of you do. And, B, to promote the questionnaire in any other places you have it that might be worth doing. Next time we have this call, it will only be about a week until the questionnaire is done, and that is, you know, getting close for people to give reasons consideration to the answer. So, please, if you can, use this week to promote the questionnaire elsewhere so we have the best coverage we can. Anything on the questionnaire before we move to item seven? Bernie, is that a new hand? Hand is old.
Old hand.
Very good. You are an old hand indeed. You're that game, Bernie. That moves to item seven, review of ICANN's past and current litigation. And we do have one new case, not a new case, but one new summary. And I will turn again to Matthew Vial to talk about this case. If we could put that summary up on the screen. And I'll turn the microphone over to Matthew. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I hope you can hear me clearly. There's a little bit of background noise here, but bear with me if it hopefully it works. So Kool.com is an interesting case because it's the only one in the list of litigations that was filed in a non-US court. It was filed in Ontario, Canada, by Kool.com, the plaintiff against ICANN, and the reason for picking Ontario was that Kool.com is an Ontario-based corporation. The venue is the Superior Court of Justice in Ontario, Canada. So there was a comment on the list about the choice of law. Indeed, the word Canadian civil law is not appropriate. It's Canadian law. And it's mostly in Ontario, it's common law. It's not civil law. There's an interesting quote from the submission by Kool.com, which is, the plaintiff proposes that this action be tried in Ottawa. But we never went, the case never went as far as a decision. So it's difficult to assess whether this would have been successful or not. The challenge was against ICANN's decision regarding VeriSign's waitlist service. The registrar, Kool.com, or I don't think it was a registrar at the time, it was probably even the reseller, was arguing it was an interference with its trade and commercial prospects, that it was violating consensus policy, breaching bylaws, and so on and so on. The case was dropped before the court actually considered it, so there's only a couple of memos exchanged. One of these memos is from ICANN, the defendant, and it's interesting, I have quoted in the summary some of the arguments that ICANN used to challenge the, to argue that the court lacked jurisdiction. These arguments included the fact that ICANN is not in Ontario, that the action has no real substantial connection to Ontario, and that all the evidence and witnesses are in California, which in this case appear pretty serious arguments. There was no impact on ICANN's accountability. The relief requested was to restrain ICANN to authorize this waitlist service and grant damages. Of course, there was no outcome and no final decision. So the benefit of this case is to actually give us a glimpse of what ICANN's arguments to challenge jurisdiction maybe in such cases, but we don't have any information about whether these arguments would have been upheld by a court or not because it never reached a decision. That's it for this case, Greg. At this point, open for questions, updates, amendments from real lawyers, and so on.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. I'd like to open the floor. I know that Sean had some comments on the list earlier today in response to your summary. I'm not clear if he is on the call or not. I see him down at the bottom there, but I see chat that says that he's perhaps not actually connected and that that's a somewhat of a ghost in the participant list, or a tease. Does anybody else have any questions or comments for Mathieu on this particular case? Tijani, please go ahead. Tijani, we're not hearing you yet. Please go ahead. since we seem to be having some trouble with Tijani's audio, and he's now typing something in the chat. David, why don't you go ahead, and we'll come back to Tijani one way or the other.
Okay, thanks, Greg. It's David McCauley for the transcript. And it's just a point of confirmation. I lost audio for a second there, Matthew, but I take it this case was not appealed.
Thanks, David. No, it was not appealed. It was dismissed before it actually reached any decision. So there was I don't think it ever reached the point where it could be. It could have been appealed because it was the case was dropped, technically, I think.
Thank you.
So no outcome whatsoever.
Thank you.
Just to follow on that briefly, Matthew, do you know whether it was dropped because the parties settled?
So I'm not a specialist here, and probably some others in the community have better insights than I have. But I understand that was part of the various litigations around the previous VeriSign versus ICANN case. So there was a whole set of contention around these extra services that VeriSign planned to introduce, many challenges around, and I think it was dropped because there was some sort of settlement or at least compromise about this, which was general, involving many other parties than the ones in this group. But that's just my interpretation of events, and there's no mention of that in the case, to be clear. Greg?
Thank you, Matthew. Why don't we turn to Caboose?
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
Caboose, please go ahead. Caboose, we're not hearing you, and there is looks like a mute on your phone in the Adobe Connect. Caboose, I do see your name coming up as an active speaker, so.
Can you hear me now, please?
Yes, now we hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay. So, it is mentioned that, thank you very much, Matthew. It is mentioned that the case is dropped. Dropped by whom? Dropped by the complainant, plaintiff, dropped by the court. This is one simple answer, maybe. But my question is that if it would have not been dropped and continued, what would have happened that one side is in Ottawa and the other side, or Ontario, the other side in California? So I just know that the case that was, if it is not dropped, what has happened? Otherwise, I don't see that we could have any result of this. But if it is not, why is it dropped? Who dropped that? And if it is not dropped, what could have happened?
Thanks, Caboose. Mathieu speaking. The plaintiff dropped. Pool.com found the case. I have no idea what would have happened if it had not been dropped, because I don't often speculate about what courts do. That's definitely something I cannot answer. And just a clarification that I mentioned, Ottawa was mentioned, Ontario is mentioned. Ottawa is a city in Ontario, which is in Canada. So when I said Ottawa and Ontario, it's basically the same jurisdiction. I hope that clarifies. And sorry, I cannot go any further into what would have happened. Thank you.
Thank you, Mathieu. Just to briefly pile on to your answer, the plaintiff must have dropped it, since if the court were to dismiss it, the court would have some sort of an order or ruling dismissing the case, and defendants can never drop cases. That's not their right. They're held in court. Only the plaintiff or the plaintiff and the defendant together can agree to settle on a case, and then they'll drop it. But it's the plaintiff's right to keep the case going, otherwise, unless the court stops it. The last of the filings was still a filing contesting the jurisdiction in the whether the court had jurisdiction over ICANN. So it's unclear. None of us, being Canadian lawyers, I assume, on this call, even predict whether the court would have ruled in favor of ICANN, dismissed the case, which would have forced Poole to sue ICANN elsewhere, wherever it could find ICANN in court, or it might have rejected the claim. I think one of our members postulated that the court would have rejected the motion to dismiss for failure of jurisdiction. As we've discussed before, there are different countries and territories where ICANN has offices, or, you know, whether they're hub offices or engagement offices or has otherwise some sort of a permanent establishment, and ICANN is not one. Canada is not one of those. So that was kind of the basis here. I'll turn to David McCauley. Thank you.
Thanks. Excuse me. Thanks, Greg. David McCauley here. I appreciate Caboose's question, and if I'm reaching back, but I believe that this subject is covered in our questions to ICANN Legal. In other words, I think if we may actually get some insight on this kind of a question when Sam comes back to us with those answers. I may be wrong, but I think it was covered in the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Caboose?
Hello. My question is that, my question is the following. I hope that you will find a case that the jurisdiction was outside the United States and that case has been completed and answered by the court, but not dropped in the middle and so on and so forth. So I would be very interested if among all those previous cases there is one single case that the jurisdiction was outside the United States and the case was completed and the court has decided on that. Otherwise, I will understand that there has been no case that the issue was dealt outside the ICANN jurisdiction in the United States. That is an interesting issue to have. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. We can confirm this with ICANN Legal, but the case is listed on the on ICANN's litigation page. Have all been brought, other than this one, somewhere in the United States. A large number in the Central District of California, which is the federal court that covers Los Angeles. But there have also been cases in Texas, Western District of Kentucky, District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., that is, Eastern District of Virginia, San Francisco State Court in San Francisco, California, and others. I won't go through the list, but a variety of U.S. states where ICANN is not, you know, physically located. So, but it appears that other than Poole, there's been no case that's been brought in a court outside the U.S. Mathieu, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Greg. I'd like to make a very quick suggestion that we clearly qualify the answer to Carol's question, as one of the findings, basically, of this exercise, I think it's a useful finding, and it's useful for many observers, people outside of our subgroup, if we can make sure that whatever the format of our report, we clarified one of our findings. There has never been a case where a court outside of the U.S. has assessed jurisdiction over ICANN. There's been only one case filed against ICANN outside of the U.S., and it was dropped by the plaintiff before it reached the point where the judge would have had to decide. I think that's an interesting finding already, and so we should probably put that aside for our later in our report, but that's one of the outcomes of this exercise so far, in my view. Thank you.
I think that's a very good point, and if staff could capture that in the notes, that would be much appreciated. Perhaps it has to do with the fact that the plaintiffs feel they can get a fair deal in California and have no jurisdictional issues, but one could hard to hypothesize without talking to plaintiff's counsel about why they chose to sue ICANN in the United States or elsewhere, you know, outside of California, but still in the U.S. So we probably have some cases where the plaintiff is not a U.S. individual or entity, and yet they have brought the cases in the United States. So that is another fact pattern, as opposed to those cases where both parties are U.S. parties. We'll approach those cases when we get them. David McCauley, please go ahead.
Great, thank you. David McCauley for the record. And I agree with what Matthew just said, and it's an interesting aspect of what we're doing. I do want to mention, I think this was in the questions that we sent to ICANN Legal, but one of the things, and I agree, this is speculation, one of the things that touches on jurisdiction is whether ICANN is subject to suit in countries in which it has offices, and I think we all assume that that's probably the case. But there's another potential basis for jurisdiction, and that is where ICANN is deemed by a court in a country where it has no presence to have targeted action or to have sort of taken, you know, acted in a manner that has a serious economic consequence or something like that. And so I would just note with respect to the Poole case, it ended in 2004. And if there is any basis to that kind of jurisdiction that I just mentioned, it's probably, it may be different in 2017 than it would have been in 2004. So I just wanted to note that for the record as a possibility. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I certainly will be interested to see if there's anything comes up there. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, I don't know whether I properly understood David's question, but mine was the following. Is it possible that a case be submitted to a court outside the United States in which ICANN does not have any office? If yes, what would be the situation? Could ICANN claim that this is not applicable because we don't have any office at that country, and that country is outside the United States, or it is not? So my question is if there might be a question for answer within the questionnaire up to 17 of April that someone raised this question. Do we have some answer? Thank you.
Kuz, I think this will be answered at least in part by the questions we've asked to ICANN Legal. So I think, you know, hopefully we will get those soon. I think it will certainly move your question along, if not answer it completely.
Okay, thank you. Waiting for a ICANN Legal reply.
Thank you, Caboose, and thank you, Mathieu, for presenting on pool.com. We are kind of right on schedule with our agenda, so if we can go back to the agenda, please. Scrolling down, this brings us to the review of a working method, as discussed on the list and briefly in the last call. Before we get there, though, I see we now have a mystery phone number in the Adobe Connect room. Who is the number ending in 1425? Did 1425 identify themselves, please? Does it have, no? Is that perhaps? Caboose, is that? Oh, that's Tijani's dial in? Okay, thank you.
Caboose, is that
hello, 1425, could it be me? This is Sean.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Sean, that's good to know. Okay, very good. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, could I wait? I think there was someone else wants to precede me. Okay, I have no problem. I wait until he finishes. Thank you.
Yes, we've just confirmed that 1425 is Sean dial-out, so we have Sean, and apparently, hopefully we have Tijani has audio, so it appears that we have solved the telephone problems, as one would hope we'd be better off than this, but that is life. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, it's about the working methods that I raised in brief at the beginning of the last plenary, and then I was left because I didn't have connection. I don't know what happened, and presumably they referred back the matter to you. There are exchange of email between the colleagues, and then I see some things like this, saying that, I quote, if some people believe that this exercise, that is our exercise, is going to make us able to say, well, we looked everywhere and we found no proof that U.S. jurisdiction of ICANN has any or any substantial implication for ICANN policy-making processes. That is simply plain silly. End of quotation. So, a similar question like this. So I would like that the people raising these questions attend the call and explain the situation, because this sort of the idea really put a lot of questions about whether what we are doing is right or what we are not doing is right. But the difficulty is that if this question is only answered by email, some of the colleagues, the respondents, are a little bit unfair. Instead of arguing in any right direction, they attack to the people raising the question that you are this or you are that, and so on and so forth. So there has been no real response to this statement. That put me in a lot of problems, that what I am doing is at the morning or night or so on and so forth, attending jurisdiction where we know that our working method does not take us anywhere. So I would like that some answer to be given to this sort of questions, which are really fundamental. And then also we mentioned that ICANN legal issue brings us something, and there is a doubt that this does not bring us anything. And they said that there is enough literature out on how courts exercise jurisdiction. So there is a lack of belief on what I can legal could contribute to our work, not with the family, with the good work that they will do. We are very grateful, but I don't think that the author of this was criticizing the ICANN legal, but criticizing the outcome would not bring us new things. So these are the doubts has been expressed. Rather than at every meeting going to formalities and so on and so forth, we should really look into the heart of the question. Does all of these works bring us something, or after 6 or 8 months, we come to the point that no, there is no consensus on anything. And in fact, one respondent to the person raising this question says that, okay, there is no consensus, and let us disband or dissolve this group. So please clarify the matter. And I raised this question in Copenhagen, where we are, and there was no answer. So please try to see really whether there is any light at the end of this long tunnel. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Before I try to answer, I'd like to hear from other members of the group, and I see David McCauley has his hand up.
Greg, thanks. It's David McCauley, again, for the record. And I saw the question on the list that Caboose quoted. I didn't respond myself, but since Caboose has raised the question, I will say with respect to the person that asked the question and others that may have commented, my opinion about this is that looking at, that the question may have raised a straw man that is not the basis on which we're doing this exercise. It seems to me, at least in my opinion, that looking at past litigation is a legitimate exercise in looking at the overall question of jurisdiction. I mean, we're asking a questionnaire where people have apparently will have some reign to speak about their impressions of what might happen in the future. It seems to me that looking at what actually happened in the past is a very sensible exercise. It's not the complete exercise of what we're doing, but my opinion is that it's the basis, you know, where the question asked, if this is what we're doing, then it's silly. I think, well, I don't think that is what we're doing. I think this is simply part of what we're doing, and it's a legitimate inquiry as to how courts have treated jurisdictional questions, if any have been raised in the past. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David.
Hello, this is Sean.
Yes, Sean, why don't you go ahead, please?
Okay, yeah, thank you. Thank you, David. I think I just like to pick up on what David just said, that it's not necessarily a complete exercise we're doing. So in response to, I mean, as we prepare, go through this process and in process of preparing the report, it needs to be clear that this exercise is not necessarily a complete exercise. What we're just doing now is we're looking at our past experiences, and then it should be clear that the conclusion that this group come up with is within that scope of past experiences, and not necessarily looking at the future or what could happen in future and addressing that. So I think we should just take note of that, and that may perhaps properly respond to what Carlos was saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. I have a hand from Mathieu, and then followed by Carlos.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, David and Sean. I think this conversation highlights the need for clarifying the various tracks of what we're doing right now, because maybe some of us are getting a little bit confused because there's been a lot of email traffic at some points seeming to go in certain directions and so on. But there's a number of fact-finding tracks that we are currently going through. The past litigation is one. The ICANN legal questions are another track, and then there's the public questionnaire. What I think it would be very useful, and remember there was a request in the plenary last week for an update on the work plan of this group, would be to try and provide maybe in a single slide or something a clarification of the various actions that our group have been undertaking recently and what the next steps will be. I think that's probably what this conversation is pointing at in terms of an overview of what we're doing, which is probably required at this point to explain why we're doing things. Thank you.
Thank you, Mathieu. Just to weigh in briefly myself, I agree with what's been said before, but I will say that I don't think any of the work we're doing is intended to create the appearance of work, nor is it intended to fill time. I think it's quite the opposite, that this is the work that is intended to bring together the facts, find the answers to questions we've had that go to the core questions that we have for the group. We still need to clarify the mandate of the group somewhat, but it's clear that we have, I think, been taking some very concrete steps to find out, to find the facts. And they're not facts that are foregone conclusions. And even if there were, we would have to have an understanding of them as a group to analyze them. And, of course, we're not just looking in terms of the effect of jurisdiction from the questionnaire or from things brought up by members of this group for legal cases, but rather for all sorts of instances. So, you know, that is what we are doing. I think I've already started preparing something along the lines that Mathieu mentioned, and I'll put it out on the list so that we can have a better overall sense of where we are. Toulouse, please go ahead.
Before leaving the Adobe connection and being on telephone in 5 minutes, I think it would be useful. First of all, I agree with David that, yes, French people, they says that they said the following: il faut connaître le passé pour comprendre le présent. It is necessary to know and find what was the past in order to understand the present. Yes, I agree with that. But it does not necessarily help us in order to understand the future. So this is something that I want to reply to David. However, it would be good, Greg, if you, either yourself and a few others, you have a paper with one or two of our slides, where we are. This is the title, where we are. You have two tracks. You have track of ICANN legal clarification. You have track of the past litigation. You have now waiting for the questionnaire on 17th of April. But then, having received these three, how we could get our ways out of these three to the future to really find a solution. So it would be good at least to have a sort of the summary after this 25 sessions that where we are now, having our objectives, the way that we try to achieve that objective, whether we are in a correct, proper way or whether we have to revise the way. That would be good if you have something in order to reply to some sort of this question which is raised and not helpfully replied. Because that person has been replied by people, by some people with some, let us say, a strong word which was not expected. Not a healthy argument. So that is my question. If you can produce something like this, it would be helpful. Thank you. Then I am meeting now with you on phone after end of your call. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think we are converging on the idea of doing a status update that will show all the work that we're doing and where we are and where we're headed. We'll get that out on the list in the next couple of days for everyone to review and revise. In terms of looking for solutions, our basic working method is to look for issues and then to try to find solutions or remedies for those issues. So the key is looking for issues that we will agree are within the mandate of this group, and then if there are any, what are the potential remedies for those issues. But let us make sure to collect our kind of where we are, and I'll bring that forward, try to tie together the work that we've done so far. I think
Hello.
All of actually
this is Sean.
Put together. Sean, please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. I just like to say, yes, our working methods have been to look for issues. We just need to qualify that in the sense that we're looking for issues in the past up to perhaps to the present. We've not necessarily looked at any possibility of any possible issues. We've not looked at what are the possible issues that may happen in the future. So I think that is the other half of it which we have not really looked into. And perhaps at some point we may want to consider whether this is what we should look into, because in the long run it would be good to have an holistic report so that we don't come missing this thing in the future. That's just my suggestion. Sorry for the background tips, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. No problem. You came through loud and clear. Mathieu says in the chat, potential issues in the future is a definition of risk. And we do need to look for risks. And I hate to say it, but our charter even says that in Workstream 2, we're still supposed to look at things in using the stress test methodology. Maybe we can call them something other than stress tests, since that term seems to stress people out. But certainly I think looking at for highly speculative hypotheses is not our I don't think it's our working method, or I would suggest it should not be. In any case, we're now at 153. I think we've had some very valuable comments here. We have a somewhat small group here, and I was hoping that the time being one that's not all that wonderful for Eastern, North and South America and Europe, but is good for those further to the east, would have brought more out. And of course, it brings us Cheryl, who's able to be with us during the daytime, a treat for her, but not others. So let's see if there are any other comments on this last item, review of working method. I'll go, if not, I will go away, so to speak, and write up the sort of status update, the where we are document, and put that out for your consideration. As it happens, I was actually working on something just like that to kind of organize my own thoughts before this call. So I think we are all looking at this rather similarly, many of us. If we don't have anything, Mathieu, please go ahead.
Yes, sorry for chiming in late. Given that the I think we have another call planned before the next plenary, maybe it would be also useful to specifically invite those who kicked this discussion off on the list and tell them that during our next subgroup call, they would be welcome to comment on the work plan so that we can have a discussion in the subgroup before we report to the plenary. So maybe a specific note could be sent out to them shortly after this call, informing them that if they could attend the next meeting, it would be much appreciated, something like this.
I think that's a very useful idea. Takes a bit away from the vibrancy of the call to not have the original poster, so to speak, on the call, and we should do that. Anything further on this point before we go to AOB? Seeing none, we'll go to. Oh, yes. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Just one thing to request. Is it possible that you and the rapporteur of this group ask the reminder whether he wishes to raise any question in the another connection that's not on the list to have a question answer like what we have today at next meeting if he so wishes? No obligation for him. That some of the concerns that you mentioned, whether you want to raise it and having some exchange of information like today, which I found very, very useful. Is it possible that you are voting? Because he's one of the objectors to many of these issues and have some concerns. I'm not qualifying his concern, but he has some concerns. But he does not attend some of the calls, so he may miss some of the discussions. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. So we'll be making up an invitation to take care of this at the next meeting and make sure that we continue to make each of these calls as meaningful and useful as possible, and also to do the same between the calls on the list. But it's really the combination of the list and the calls and the documents that really make up our useful matter. So I think that brings us to AOB. I don't know if anybody has any other business. Seeing none, I will remind everyone the next call is on the 11th of April at 1300 UTC, and that we will as Bernie notes in the chat, the plenary is on the 12th, so we will have a clear chance to kind of hopefully bring this issue, under number 8 into fairly good form before the plenary. And so I thank you all for participating wherever you are and whatever time it is. It's 2 a.m. here in New York City, and I am going to enjoy going to sleep very shortly. So I want to thank everybody for participating, a useful and well-thought-out call. I will say goodbye and adjourn. We may stop the recording. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.